Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, we've got to cut you down. Sooner or later, we've got to cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Well, welcome to Walls in Our Minds. I'm operating the switchboard solo right now, and the switchboard is not up, so I can't open up any other mics, and I'm hoping that my mic is live. So I'm going to keep trying here and see if I can get the technical issues resolved. Hopefully Mr. Red Beckman, my co-host, is waiting in the wings, as our guest Tim Harrington. So if you're listening to me, please be patient here. I will get to you, I promise. It's just going to take me just a moment. Our producer, Mama Cooks, is on vacation this week, which left me to handle the reins, and I've been trying to learn how this back switchboard of Blog Talk Radio works, and I thought I had it all ready to rock and roll, and I must have done something that managed to get me knocked out of it. And I'm having some connection issues, so hopefully the server will be up and running here shortly, and I will be able to get other microphones open. And I'm just hoping that you can hear me now. I can't even see the switchboard, or the chat room. Last time this happened, Mama Cooks was on here, and I suggested to her that she sing a song, and she did. God bless her. I wish she was here now. I'm really missing her. It just keeps not connecting me. And I keep refreshing, and I think I might be in. Well, I'll have to log back in here. I'm making progress. All right. Well, let's see if I can. Mr. Red Beckman, you have a live mic finally.
I am present and accounted for.
Tim, is that you? Yes, I hear you loud and clear, Red. Tim, are you live mic now?
If you can hear me, I believe so.
Oh, well, that's a miracle. We're all here, and hopefully everybody else is able to hear us, too. I had the switchboard up about 10 minutes ago, and then it just went down on me, and I had a heck of a time getting back in to get it fired up. Red, have you talked with Tim Harrington before?
I don't remember if I did. I don't remember. I may have, but hopefully he has a better memory than I have.
Well, Tim,
I don't believe we.
How about you give us just a little bit of background on yourself and just to get our listeners warmed up, because we've got some folks here that may not have ever heard you before.
All righty. Well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for inviting JB and I on this evening. We've been, as you know, Bob, 100 miles an hour on what we're doing, and I need to apologize to JB tonight. I left what we were doing, so at least one of us was here as we promised. And he, you know, wishes to say thank you and hello to everybody, and thank you for your time for inviting us on. As far as me, I'm no different than anybody else that's listening. I've been involved in military law and constitutional law for quite a while for different reasons. I've been involved in a lot of the military cases of the last 5 years on independent investigation and helping the families, helping in defense. Right now, we're fully involved with what's going on with Lieutenant Colonel Lakin, because of the magnitude of what that case represents to everybody in America. As far as politics and the other things that I'm involved in, as you know, we've started what's called the U.S. Patriots Union. That is based with different principles and missions in it, and our focus is to take a lot of things on head-on. It won't fit for everybody, but you'll get a little bit of a feeling for what we do, how we do it, who we work with, and we're going to get into arbitration, litigation. We're going to take a lot of issues that affect us every day in our own lives, especially what's going on in the country now, head on, whether it be in the court system or wherever we need to do it. And work directly from the ground up, breaking it up into states and within those states, districts, and within those districts' precincts. So it's been a big undertaking, and we're involved in that. We're involved in Monroe County. I am with Commander Fitzpatrick. We're involved in Arizona. We're involved right now in Nevada with Tim Fasano, with some of the things that are going on in the judiciary. So we have a lot of balls in the air, and right now, as you asked me to come on this evening, was to talk a little bit about military history and why maybe Lieutenant Colonel Lakin is a person that every patriot in the country needs to get behind right now, because his case affects everybody.
Are you hearing, are you guys hearing any back recording?
I am not, sir.
Good. I was concerned. I was trying to open up the chat room on a different window, and it was wasn't letting me mute the sound, which is on a delay. So, Tim, I'm just really tickled to have you on. I say tickled. That's kind of a funny word, I guess. But very pleased that you're able to make it tonight. Especially as busy as you and JBR, and I really appreciate what you guys are doing. I know that right now your focus is primarily on the Colonel Lakin situation and the white paper that you've issued and some of the other documents and things that you guys have been working on here in the last couple of days. Are you getting any sleep?
Not much. Not as much as we should. Actually, yesterday, it was a long day because of what we were doing, and we work, off the computers and on Skype and phone. But the Skype was on, so we'd go back and forth and go through what we had to do and get things done. And we were on yesterday for almost 17 hours. Yesterday what we had to do and had to get it done for Patriots, U.S. Patriots Union, was get together what we had started.
I believe that Mr. Harrington just dropped off of our board. Well, Red?
I'm here.
While we're waiting for him to call back in, how about you open us with a prayer?
Heavenly Father, we come to you needing all of the help that we can get. We are totally inept and unable. We're powerless without your power that we can rely upon in our search for truth. help us that we have that willingness to learn the truth, that desire to learn the truth. Help us to put a high value on truth as we do the program tonight and for every day of the rest of our lives, that we might have that desire, that real strong desire to be, that gift of truth, that love of truth that you talked about. Help us to become so much involved in that, that it just would be our total focus in life, is to find truth. And so we pray that you would bless this service or this program tonight. Bless those that are here as guests and help them to explain what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do it. They're doing a great work. And we just pray that the audience out there will join with us and pray a prayer that your will be done as we try to make this program effective and to where we can reach a lot of people with what you would have us to say. We thank thee for this privilege tonight, and we just pray that your blessing would be upon us. We ask it in thy holy name. Amen.
Amen, Red, and I believe Tim is back with us. Tim, you dropped off. I have no idea where you left off.
I don't either. We're just talking about putting together the National Veterans Council from within the Patriots Union. So we've been very busy.
Well, how can we help you in the state of Colorado? I'm out here, so what can I do?
State of Colorado, we've got some great folks that have come aboard from out there, and we've all got the same issues, whether they align directly or not. So, working together and using this information, when I'm talking about a subject, there's been a lot of time put into it, a lot of study, but I really don't want folks to take me on my word. We can supply the tools and the information that gets you to where you can see it for yourself. If you can see it for yourself, what we're trying to do is make a path for everybody. There's so many different things going on that's being thrown against the wall that it takes folks off into different directions. You don't get to focus on the primary project to follow it through and get it done. And that's what we're doing. We're trying to build a path and show folks the difference between right and wrong, is or decent or indecent. And it's easy because if you dig through these things and make it as simple as possible, no matter what anybody's background is, the first thing we're taught when we're kids is right and wrong. So everybody gets to understand it. And that's how we're putting this together. If we can supply people at the grassroots level that are getting involved or getting involved at the grassroots level with national issues that are really important, and I want to stress the Lakin case tonight, and we'll get into that if you allow me to in a few minutes, this will affect everybody. But, I said this a few weeks ago talking to somebody because they were talking about Clawitt Piven. And most folks know what Clawitt Piven's about, know what the structure of Clawitt Piven's about, know what it revolves around. And you keep getting told that Clawitt Piven was designed to overwhelm the system, which it has. The problem is 18-20% of the country, of 310 million, are the ones who overwhelm the system. So rather than talk about it, let's take some tools, work together. Use that sort of thinking. What would happen if 80% of the country used the same philosophy for all the right reasons and overwhelmed the system that is doing this to you and doing it peacefully to get it done? So those are some of our goals.
Well, you're certainly welcome to launch right into whatever you'd like to talk about, Tim. I'm really anxious to get an update on the Lakin situation, especially what's happening here in the last just few days.
Okay. And as I said, Bob, I'm going to go through this and stuff, and maybe if anybody has any questions, I'll answer them. And then I'm going to go back to what I can do so I can go to bed tonight at a regular time. I want to focus on things that we talked about today, especially with Lakin and why it's so important. The Lakin case and what has gone on with Lieutenant Colonel Lakin refusing what they're saying is a lawful order. Folks need to understand what this is all about and where your standing is. You've seen all kinds of civil litigation that has gone on over the past year and a half just asking a simple question. I want everybody to forget about the birth certificate. The birth certificate is a rabbit trail, and this is why they want you on that rabbit trail. If you look at our white paper, or the white paper that we produced last Friday, we had this information, and we were getting ready to put it where it needed to be to bring it into the general public. But when I saw, and JB, we talked about the opinion that came out in the hearing, in Lakin's case at Fort Meade on Thursday, we knew we had to release it on Friday so that people understood what the white paper was about and what the actual question is. A lot of people have been asking the wrong question. The birth certificate is the wrong question. When you get into your Constitution, Article 1 talks about the law of nations. And in Article 1, when you go to a true copy of the Constitution, you will see that it's capitalized. And it's capitalized for a reason. The Law of Nations has a long history written by Vattel, and the founders used this to create, as a guideline, the Constitution. So when you hear folks starting to fight over Article 2 on what the qualifications are to be President of the United States and the restrictions thereof, a lot of folks like to run to the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment has been used in arguments as another smokescreen. The 14th Amendment has nothing to do with Article 2. The 14th Amendment and the arguments and precedent that has been set by the 14th Amendment revolves around immigration and naturalization. Immigration and naturalization has nothing to do with the qualifications set forth by the Second Amendment of the Constitution, supported by the First Amendment with the laws of nations. It's clear, and it's the only argument nobody has taken to the Supreme Court or any other court. Now, when it comes to Colonel Lakin asked that question. As a military officer, Colonel Lakin is bound by obligation if, in fact, he feels as an officer, and his oath is to the Constitution, not the President of the United States. It's done that way so that officers that are put in charge of enlisted or inferior soldiers stay within the limitations of the Constitution. So when Colonel Lakin asked the question of his command or told his command he was going to refuse his orders, long before he actually had to refuse his orders because of rotation, it was the onus of his question now landed on the chain of command. The chain of command they're trying to break at the Pentagon level. That's completely false because there's only one person in the chain of command that speaks for the entire military. And I there's some things I'd like to read so people understand. I'll give you a brief background, and Bob, I have to apologize. I did some digging, and I promised to send you some things today. I will tonight so you have copies to share on your site or with folks. But there's a name everybody has to remember and two volumes that are set forth as the standard for the UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. The justice system, the UCMJ, is not a justice system. It's a penal code, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the Constitution or the justice, the third branch of government of the United States. It has nothing to do with it. Folks that have been in the military are going to argue. I'm a former Marine. I didn't realize until I started studying full-time the history of the UCMJ or the Articles of War. They're actually the war articles. The change of the name of the UCMJ came through 1949 and was applied in 1950 going into 51. And the reason that was done was the amount of complaints and the charges that stemmed out of World War II and the injustices that were done during that war to military people. What happened, if everybody remembers, in World War II, in a world war, and you know your history, you had farmers, you had every type of citizen that was able to fight as an able body that went into the military. Some spent a year, some spent 2 years, some spent the entire war. But you finally had a group of citizens that went into the service and got to see this system, this tyrannical system, firsthand. So much had happened after the Second World War that they had to do something to make it uniform. And that's how this came into be, the UCMJ, Uniform Code of Military Justice. This fight's been going on since the beginning of the Articles of War. You can go back to 1919, the Ansel Crowder debates. The Ansel Crowder debates originated in 1919. You can find them in Cornell Law. The entire fight through 1919 in the debate was the constitutionality of the Articles of War. They do not meet the criteria of the Constitution. When the Articles of War were adopted, they were adopted from the British. The Articles of War are older than any basic jurisprudence in the land. It started way back in the 11th century. They were refined during the 17th century. The British took them and they started to get refined through Roman theology, and they were actually brought up to speed into where they were introduced to the United States through the British. The British don't use the Articles of War because their parliament doesn't allow it. The United States Congress has left them in place. The day that the Constitution was ratified in Philadelphia, the Articles of War became illegal. They're based on Roman law. They're not based on common law, which is what we are supposed to now be using, which we don't. And we'll talk about that further down the road. Am I losing anybody? Everybody understanding what
I'm following you pretty good, but I don't know about everybody else. I mean, this is a lot of information to take in. I mean, when I start talking about the law of nations, one of the things that I have to make very clear to people, the fact that it's referenced in the Constitution means that its terminology and some of its practices were actually incorporated into the Constitution. And the Law of Nations was not just a book written by Vattel. It was, in fact, a body of law that was in practice at the time. And Vattel did a very efficient job of codifying that in his book by the same name.
Absolutely. And it codifies that is used globally, internationally, as the rule for your birth, your bloodline. But what I'm getting into now is the history of what I'm getting at with the UCMJ,
yes,
or the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So now we've established through what I've been explaining that it's no justice system, never was, never was set up to be. Now we need to know where the power of that disciplinary system, it's a penal code. That's why it's the Uniform Code of Military Justice. It is a penal code. Now, the man's name that everybody needs to hear is William Winthrop. Colonel William Winthrop has been touted as the new Blackstone, or actually the new Blackstone of this era, a literary law scholar. He's been quoted over 20 times by the Supreme Court of the United States. His writings in Volume 1 and Volume 2 of Military Law and Precedents is the most tyrannical writing defacing the Constitution anybody could read. It has spilled into the citizenry, and as we talk, I can explain why it has spilled into the citizenry and why folks don't have standing today. Everybody's heard in some of these civil litigations, you don't have standing. That's all you hear is you don't have standing. Well, I'm here to tell you you don't, because they took that away from you in 1946. The one person who has standing right now and has standing on national security issues for everybody in the United States to uphold the Constitution is Lieutenant Colonel Lakin. Lieutenant Colonel Lakin has stuck his neck out to show the people in this country where we're headed and where the fight is. The fight right now is at Fort Meade. Because if they're allowed to do what they're trying to do to Colonel Lakin, your Constitution has now been taken over and usurped by the military, never mind the Commander-in-Chief, and you're going to be in a dictatorship. It may not be a dictatorship that they come out and make a statement, you're under martial law. They're going to trash what's left of your protections under the Constitution. Everybody says the Constitution are their rights. Your Bill of Rights derive from the Constitution's protections. That's what that's all about. And let me read you page 49, just an excerpt out of page 49 so people understand me more, of William Winthrop's writing. And this is out of Military Law and Precedents, which is the cornerstone and foundation of the UCMJ, which has its separate code in the U.S. Code, as you know, separate of the judiciary of citizens under the Constitution. It says, not belonging to the judicial branch of government, it follows that court-martials must pertain to the executive department, and they are in fact simply instrumentalities of the executive power provided by the Congress for the President as Commander-in-Chief to aid him in properly commanding the Army and Navies and enforcing discipline therein and utilized under the orders of those of his authorized military representatives. What I'm trying to say here and what I'm reading to you of what this military code is about, it's directly run and represents at every level the Commander-in-Chief. The Commander-in-Chief is the citizen oversight of the armies and navies, which means Colonel Lakin is asking, he's not asking, he's demanding an answer. He's asked his command through what he knows or has heard to give him question on whether his orders are lawful or not. And in return, his boss and everybody who is, to include the convening authority right now, the general that has convened this court-martial, directly represents the Commander-in-Chief. There's a so-called judge, or what they call a judge, which is a reviewing officer. They have no judge powers. She can't leave the bench and go down the street to a court and sit as a judge. The Department of Defense doesn't get to pick judges, but they do in the military. It's just a facade to be able to use the terms that people recognize for a true judiciary. But what's happened here is to take Colonel Lakin into a court-martial, nobody has showed them where their power derives from. Colonel Lakin has asked the question on whether his orders are lawful or unlawful, and they haven't yet showed him whether they know if their orders are lawful under a lawful commander-in-chief. This is the stigma that's going on that they're trying to hide in the military. Let me break this down. An order. This is Winthrop, page 576. All military authority and discipline are derived from one source, the sovereign. So in our army, every superior, in giving a lawful command, acts for and represents the President as the Commander-in-Chief and executive power of the nation, and the source from which the senior officer, appointment, and authority proceeds, hence the dignity and significance of a formal military order, and hence the gravity of the obligation which it imposes upon the inferior whom it is addressed. That's Winthrop, page 572. So when folks start fighting over rank and all this good stuff and where orders originate, you're hearing for a fact right now, through the documents that make the Uniform Code of Military Justice what it is and where it derives its power from. The power source is derived for everybody directly from the Commander-in-Chief. Now, we can get into also I'd like to, talk about illegal orders, because it's been said an illegal order from this gentleman, if in fact he's not eligible for the office, could not be illegal because he was elected into this office by the majority, by the popular vote. Well, we have laws in this land, and I don't care if 310 million people voted for this gentleman. The Constitution isn't usurped by anything that goes on as a happenstance. We're either a law of a nation of laws or a nation of men. And right now we got mob rule going on here, and nobody's paying attention to the very basics of what our common law is that we need to stand by. They're arguing and jumping over mouse poop, to put it simply. I'd like to read this out of page 575. An illegal order emanating from the president can confer no authority. I'll repeat this, because this is what Colonel Lakin is asking. An illegal order emanating from the president can confer no authority. A command not lawful may be disobeyed, no matter from what source it's proceeded. Winthrop, page 575. And with that, there is nothing better settled, as well by the civil and military laws, that neither officers nor soldiers are bound to obey any illegal order of their superior officers, but on the contrary, it is their bounden duty to disobey them. That's a quote. No illegal act can be justified, no matter how high the source from which it emanates, by an order from a superior authority. The soldier is still a citizen, and as such is always amenable to the civil authority. That is your Constitution. The protections in your Constitution don't go away with this myth that when you put a uniform on, you now fall under only the UCMJ. You don't swear allegiance to this country, and you don't swear allegiance to defend the Constitution with your life and die for it, as our men and women have done through generations, and then all of a sudden say, well, you don't have those rights. You don't have those protections. That's what they're trying to say at Fort Meade right now. And this is what we're fighting with about the other kids that are sitting in Leavenworth right now that we can prove are innocent, that are sitting there as political pawns of the last two wars that we're in for political expediency.
Well, Red Beckman here, my co-host, has been one of the great promoters of common law and getting people to recognize that they have the right to judge the law as a juror, and that the people, in fact, are the creator of the law, and therefore they are above the law. And, of course, we know that this regime, many of us have termed it, wants to reverse that pecking order. But I'm going to let Red jump in there on that one.
Well, you know, I've been talking about pecking order now for 35 years or better. I've traveled this country from top to bottom and from side to side, and I've made hundreds of speeches at conventions and seminars and all of that. And I always teach the pecking order that was established. It was established when this country, when we adopted the Constitution as the supreme law of the land. And of course, the pecking order, which I used, I had visual aids. I had our Heavenly Father, our Creator, at the top. I had His law as next, and then I had the common law and the laws of grammar, and then I had we the people. The individual, basically. He's next in line. He has He has the inalienable rights that our Creator granted to each and every one of us. The trial jury and the grand jury are at the same level in this order of authority, as I call it, or the pecking order. They're at the same level with we the people. And then the Constitution is next in that lineup. And it's the Constitution is a higher power over all of our public servants. I explained it at a meeting here sometime in the past where we got into a discussion of the scripture in Romans 13, how that it says, let every soul be subject to the higher powers. We have to define who the higher powers are or where they are and where we fit into that. And, of course, the only higher power over we the individual and we the people of this country is our Creator. However, everybody that takes a government job, whether it's military or whether it's a federal judge or president of the United States, U.S. senator, congressman, every one of those have two higher powers over them. We have one. We the people have one, our Creator. And those people below the Constitution, of course, the president, and all the rest of the public servants, they not only have the Creator as a higher power, but they have the Constitution for the United States of America as a higher power over them. So they have two higher powers that they are subject to, that they must recognize and they must obey and stay, keep themselves in that proper position under those two higher powers. The Congress, of course, is under the Constitution, the courts, and all the rest of it, the military, everybody in the government are under the Constitution. They're under it because the Constitution is the authority. It is the law that we the people wrote to create a government. The Constitution is creative law in that it gives you the instructions as to how the Congress is to establish how they're supposed to work, Article 1, of course, enumerates the authority that Congress has under the Constitution. And, of course, Article 2 is the law that creates the executive branch of government and enumerates their authority and what powers they have. Any other powers which they may exercise are usurped powers. They are not lawful. And of course, Article 3 of the Constitution gives you the instructions how the judiciary is to be established and where they fit into the picture. This is something, this pecking order, this order of authority is so basic. And as I have traveled this country over the past many years, I have never found anyone who was ever taught this basic principle in their education system, whether it be the public schools 1 through 12 or their colleges, their postgraduate, and all the rest. I've never found anybody that has ever had that the principle that has really been taught to them in a way that they understand. It is so easy to understand when you make your diagrams and such. And as I hear all these arguments about the sovereignty issue and all, I usually am able to detect rather quickly that the people talking about this really do not understand the order of authority in the system that we were given there a little over 200 years ago. And so with that, I hope that's what you were looking for, Terry.
Well, it is. Tim, the question is, does a person lose their unalienable rights when they join the military? Do they lose their protection under the Constitution?
They do not. They do not in any way. Nobody signs in that contract going into any branch of the military. They sign, and I can get to that as we go. They give none of their protections up, none. And with what this gentleman was just talking about, I'll read something that will put the hair on everybody's neck up to understand what this system's about, and it will fall in line with exactly the explanation that was just said to everybody. You know, bear with me for a second. This is coming from Chapter 18 of evidence in the actual manual on page 413, excuse me. And what I'm going to do is I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm going to read a paragraph that will explain in detail exactly what we're talking about now. It says, thus indeed is laid down and repeated by the authorities on the subject. And as much as the rule of evidence are in the main, the result of the best wisdom and experience of the past, approved and ratified by modern intelligence. Here we go talking about man again, when we're based on God's law or common law. This is where everybody needs to listen. It is clear that the military tribunals cannot generally safely assume to reject or ignore them. But the eminence of a military proceeding is summary and vigorous in action. And moreover, court martials are no part of the judiciary of the United States, are not even courts in the full name of the term, but are, in peace as well as war, simply bodies of military men ordered to investigate accusations, arrive at facts, and where just, recommend a punishment. In the absence thereof of statutory direction, they can scarcely be held bound to the same strict adherence to common law rules as are the true courts of the United States. And upon trial, they may be properly be allowed to pursue a more liberal course in regard to the admission of testimony and the examination of witnesses than do habitually the civil. Can I explain any clearer to anybody listening what a court-martial represents? That is the actual foundation and writing of the man who put together as the modern-day Blackstone, supposedly. And if anybody knows the history of Blackstone, Blackstone is from England, English law, English common law, that was adopted through our framers, put together with the law of nations to adopt a doctrine signed by the people, which you now call the Constitution of the United States. So what is happening here and why it's so important and why I'm reading this? There's one more thing that I'll read as we talk, as I explain what's going on, and I'll supply this to Bob as I explain. The fight we're in, or the fight Lieutenant Lakin is in, is a soldier representing the United States. He's an exemplary soldier, Bronze Star winner. As soon as this man asked the question, he has been made to look the fool publicly, on TV, and in print. When all actuality, the fools are us, because nobody's standing beside this man. And if they continue to be allowed for these actions to go forward, the only ones are going to be laughing are your masters, because it will have come, the military turned its head on the Constitution years ago. I break the military down to a good friend that gave me this to use, Norm LaFontaine is his name, He's a combat veteran out of the Marine Corps. It's written in a book as a quote from Norm, and it was broke down to where you can understand it. You have the brotherhood, and then you have the institution. The brotherhood of the military, the branches of the military, are your heavy lifters, the lower-hanging fruit. Through our generations, the warfighters, the warriors, which are your lower-ranking enlisted and lower ranks of the officers. That is the heavy lifters. Now, let's not single them out, because the backbone of the military are the families. The families loan these people to our government to have our government take care of them while they protect us. They are on loan. That's all they are. But yet we're sitting here calling ourselves patriots, not realizing what the heck is going on and what is being taken away from them and now you, at a time of importance, without standing tall and understanding the content of what you're actually losing. You're losing the rest of your Constitution. If, in fact, they're allowed in a military court that is not a court, we've just explained it and read it, and has nothing to do with what your Constitution stands for, and it is usurped and taken away from the men and women in uniform, then what do you have? Because it's already been taken away from you at the executive level. I don't want to get into politics. I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. The laws that have been passed and the money that's been stolen from the citizen coffers, everybody knows is unconstitutional. Everybody's screaming about it. Nobody's doing anything concrete. Everybody's walking in circles. As the gentleman before me was speaking, it's not hard. Break it down to the simplest form, which is fact and truth, which we're doing tonight, and then you start to understand what, in fact, you're losing. So with Colonel Terry Lakin and what went on Thursday in the hearing officer, one, you need to, everybody needs to know where she derives her power,
authority.
Not only power, but authority. Now, we've already come to the conclusion that her authority comes directly from the commander-in-chief. All authority, I read it to everybody, where it comes from. I don't care what rank you are. And in movement, all the movement has to be start at the commander-in-chief. And then what takes that movement and the orders given after the fact directly represent the commander-in-chief. What they've tried to say to Terry Lakin on Thursday, Colonel Lind, who was the hearing officer, I refused to call him a judge, some of what she had to say and set as precedents makes absolutely no sense. All it is a head fake to take everybody's eye off the ball. And I've gone through the documents since last Thursday, when it was made available to me, and we looked at some of the precedents. And the precedents that she gave has no object or has any impact on Colonel Lakin's trial, because the Supreme Court of the United States didn't even uphold it. They upheld the conviction, but they affirmed why this young Coast Guardsman, this is what it revolves around, they upheld the conviction because he was found guilty and admitted guilt in lower courts. But his appeal that made it to the Supreme Court after CAF was on the basis that the CAF court had two judges that were not appointed by a president. They sat in on this appellate process, which was illegal, and the Supreme Court said it was. She's using this, and I'm going to read part of it. This is James D. Ryder, petitioner versus the United States, on writ of citori to the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. This is June 12, 1995. And when you read the opinion of the reviewing officer with Lakin, she uses what's called the de facto officer's doctrine. That's what this document is that I'm going to read to you, the fifth paragraph. And the de facto officer's doctrine is irrelevant to what's going on with Colonel Lakin, because even the Supreme Court didn't uphold it. They upheld the conviction, but not the intent. But this is something that I want to read to people so you know what's going on here. In the fifth paragraph, it reads, the de facto officer's doctrine confers validity upon, and let me stop for a second. This is Chief Justice Rehnquist delivering this opinion for the court. So this isn't Tim Harrington talking here. It says the de facto officer's doctrine confers validity upon acts performed by a person acting under the color of official title, even though it is later discovered that the legality of that person's appointment or election to office is deficient. Does everybody realize what I'm reading here?
Yes.
The question was from Colonel Lakin was whether his orders were lawful or unlawful, which would be illegal due to nobody answering the question over 20 months, a year and a half, of whether this man is legal or not. Now, we know because his father was a Kenyan, and in his own writing, he says to everybody his father was a Kenyan. According to our Constitution, he is not eligible to sit in the office. Now you have a judge or a reviewing officer pointing to the de facto officer's doctrine that does not even, at this point, stand in her own argument. So let me read this again, and then I'll finish this one paragraph, and then I want folks to let the chat room know, I can't see it right now, or the folks I'm talking with, what you think of this. It says, the de facto office doctrine confers validity upon acts performed by a person acting under the color of the office title, even though it is later discovered that the legality of that person's appointment or election to office is deficient. Norton v. Shelby County, 118 U.S. 425, 440, 1886. The de facto doctrine springs from the fear of the chaos that would result from multiple and repetitious suits challenging every action taken by every official whose claim to office could be open to question, and seeks to protect the public by ensuring the orderly functioning of the government despite technical defects in the title of the office. 63 A.M. Juris Second. I hope folks understand what I'm saying here. I'm not making this up. I am reading from Justice Rehnquist's opinion that this reviewing officer is pointing at taking away Lakin's constitutional protections and then stating that this whole thing could be embarrassing to the President of the United States. It should be embarrassing to the United States citizens that they're allowing this to go on. You have a court right now, excuse me, it's not a court. I've explained to you it is not a court. You have a facade that looks like a court, not even using constitutional or common law, taking the rest of your constitution away, stating that, yeah, maybe the guy, you guys are right. But Jesus, we can't let that happen. There'll be all kinds of chaos. And then people are really going to want a piece of these people. Your form of government is being transformed into something it's not. It's called treason on several levels. And now you have two officers, a reviewing officer, and you have the officer that's in charge of this, the convening authority, taking the authority upon themselves to do this. This should scare the heck out of everybody listening to this tonight.
Let's break this down. I believe most everyone understands what the term de facto means, and Justice Rehnquist actually kind of spelled it out in what you just read. But in essence, it means that they lack delegated authority, but they are in effect exercising a police power. I'm not going to call it authority because it lacks authority.
There is no authority.
But it is a power simply because no one's stopping it.
Absolutely. Now the other arguments that she said, that nobody has challenged this, which gives no credence, supposedly, to Colonel Lakin's question. I beg to differ. There's been a treason complaint filed by a naval officer for over a year and a half. It was filed in Knoxville, Department of Justice, and they've obstructed it for a year and a half. There are two other criminal complaints that have been given to the Department of Justice, and they refuse to move forward. So now let's look at Mr. Berg, Ms. Tites, and all the folks that are, Mr. Apuzzo, all these people that brought the birth certificate issue, which isn't even a question. There's no reason to ask that question. We've just explained through Article 1 and Article 2 and through how the Constitution was put together through the law of nations, and the self-admittance of the man in the White House as not being having a father that is at any time was ever a U.S. citizen. Let's break this down. In his own hand, he's saying he's not eligible for office. I'll bet you if you go to the White House and you look at the White House doctrine on their backgrounds, on the White House pages, you'll find out that his mother's from Kansas and his father's Kenyan. It's right on their own website. So apply to your own constitution and the restrictions thereof. Why are these people so stupid? Why are they asking about a birth certificate? Now let's go back to the way the courts work. If in fact there's criminal complaints in place, then the civil complaints cannot go forward. But they've obstructed the criminal complaints and have allowed the civil complaints, which are actionable. They have action. But they're not actionable until the criminal complaints are remedied. So everybody's been chasing a rabbit. The answer's always been in Article 1 and Article 2. All this stuff that has taken everybody down a rabbit trail has no standing, and the people don't have standing because in 1946 they took your constitutional rights, constitutional common law courts away from you by implementing the rules of procedure. Criminal rules of procedure, civil rules of procedure. They don't go by the Constitution anymore or your rights. They go by the rules they now have put in place, which is admiralty law, international law. So when you get talking about standing, that's a whole different subject because I wanted to focus on the military tonight and Colonel Lakin. But you're seeing your complete standing or the protections you have come full circle, and you're losing them. And the last battlefield for standing, not to lose any of it and bring it forward, is in Fort Meade with Colonel Lakin.
So I trust that you're a man of solution.
The solution go ahead, sir. I'm sorry to interrupt.
We try to focus on things that people can do here on the show.
Absolutely.
We try to, if we keep a positive attitude, along with recognizing the reality of the situation and try to focus on the things that we're actually capable of accomplishing. And I'm sure you're that kind of person. And I know that some of the things may not be able to be talked about openly right now, but to what extent can you talk about them?
Right now, there's a lot of things going on, as I said to you, Bob, earlier, and I couldn't share them, only because it would affect what's going on. And as everybody knows, you can't show your hand in any way or talk about it because the roadblocks come up. But there's a push right now. What everybody needs to do is to research what I'm saying. I'll make sure Bob, by the morning, gets some of this paperwork and some of the things that everybody could chase and read for yourself. What we need to do is get behind Colonel Lakin. The white paper. Bob, did you get the white paper? Everybody's got access to the white paper right now between General Vallely's site, Stand Up,
Tim,
America, Stand Up America.
Tim, I've seen the white paper. I've also seen some of your other stuff that Neil Turner put out there, and I don't know if Neil's one of them that's listening on the line right now or not. But
Neil's a great guy. Neil is doing a yeoman's work with a gentleman named Ani Rosner also. There's so many people that now, we don't need the media. we have a media. We have what we're doing here on radios. We have the internet. We have technology. We can take care of this way. There's a group of people. Right now, Colonel Lakin doesn't have a defense, and I'm just going to come out and say it, because they're not defending him. We can't figure out what's going on. We cannot figure out what's going on. Folks out here have to take this. The veterans from around the country have to get together and have to unite. There's no ifs, ands, or buts at this point.
Tim, I don't want to take your time. By the way, I'll change my name to Bob. Bob's good, but my name's Terry, and I'm sure
people out there
wondering.
I am sorry.
Time for a break. It's time for a break.
Red, I know it, but I don't have to go to break right now. And I think with the time we've got, and someone did just put their hand up from area code 760. I'm going to open that mic so they can jump in here in just a second. But Tim, I've really got some stuff on my heart that's been laid on me in the last few days, and I just it there's so much that people need to understand about the spiritual battle. We are in a spiritual battle, and that battle ultimately is for the souls of men. And I'm here to tell you, if somebody's not standing on the truth, because I think you've laid out what the truth is of this defense for Terrence Lakin, you've laid out that exactly what they should be focusing on, but they are afraid to focus on that, or they are, you know, I'm not sure what their motives are, like you. I don't know what their motives are.
I'll come out and say it, Terry. At this point, either they're afraid of it or they're part of it. I'll come out and say it, because there's no other excuse.
Well, if you distort what a natural-born citizen is, if you allow 14th Amendment case opinions, whether they're dissenting or not, to enter into this, you're in essence distorting the whole natural-born definition. And even if you were to be able to win, which I do not believe they can, because in essence what they're doing is a lie, because they're not standing specifically on the truth. Look at the way the left brings out something they want to deceive the public about. They focus on a specific lie, and they keep repeating it, and they repeat it and repeat it until some people actually start to perceive it as truth. If we don't focus on what the truth is and keep putting it out there, then the general public are going to become confused about what is truth and what's a lie and what's a distortion. We're actually accomplishing the purpose of the left by not staying on a focus on what the truth is.
And absolutely.
So does anybody listening ever remember God blessing a lie or give victory to anyone who's promoting a lie? Have you ever seen God do that? Have you ever seen it in Scripture? Have you ever seen it in real life? I haven't. So to me, what they're doing absolutely goes against God and their faith in God. If you have faith in God, you're going to stand on the truth. And they're not doing that. And by not doing that, they defeat themselves immediately. Well, why are they doing that? I mean, even if they were to be able to come off with some kind of miracle, which none of us believe that in this venue they're going to get any success, they're just going to get a slap in the face by this police power, this de facto police power. But if they could just miraculously actually end up with an acquittal, what they've given them a distorted definition of Article 2.
Absolutely. That's why this fight is what it needs to be, and needs to be backed by everybody who can do it in Fort Meade. That's why we finally got the National Veterans Council together, so that we can work with all the other veterans. We are doing it. We talk with national organizations that have, you know, that have over 250,000 veterans involved with them yesterday, collectively, and there's more out there. We need to do this from the outside in. We need to get this information out. There is a statement that's going to be out in the next couple of days, probably the beginning of the week, because we're coming into Friday, with another white paper, as we promised to follow up from the initial white paper a week ago tomorrow. And these are going to be the tools everybody has. From there, we get them every place. As far as the grassroots movement, anybody who can get their hands on the white paper and demand, you don't ask, you demand of your representatives in your state, don't call them, don't hand-deliver it, there's no reason to do so. Spend the 43 cents or 45 cents, whatever it is to lick a stamp, send it certified mail. Send it certified mail, save the numbers, and we're going to do a drive and post them all so we know what the numbers are from around the country, and there will not be a representative in the United States that can hide behind I don't know. And while that is going on, we are working right now, and it will be announced next week, what we're going to try to do to help Terry Lakin, and that will be public. The only problem is, at that point, is what Colonel Lakin wants or what his defense wants. But the truth of what the fight is and what it represents will be out there for every American to stand on and demand. Because if you don't, at this juncture in Fort Meade, this country and what protected you as the way you knew it won't exist. It will not exist.
Tim, let's see who's Terry.
You're broken up on me, Terry, a little bit. I'm only getting bits and pieces.
Area code 760, you have a live mic.
Yeah, this is Neil Turner.
Hello, Neil.
Hi, guys.
Neil, good evening.
Yay, great show, great comments. Really sets the stage. One quick thing, Tim, on the de facto authority and the fact that if he's found to be deficient after the fact, it wasn't fully clear. In other words, it kind of came across as in order to avoid all kinds of people making claims, even though it was deficient, that the de facto authority would stand. Now, it must be exactly the opposite.
It is the exact opposite. And Neil, I want to say to everybody and yourself, I don't want to send anybody back out into the weeds. This opinion is what is written, and I'll get the opinion to you, Neil. I can send it to you tomorrow, email, so you can read it. All this is, and what I want people to understand, is this is nothing but a head fake of pompous nothing that applies to Lakin in any way. But by going through the opinion, you can read into what she is getting at. And what she's trying to say, and I believe at the end of the, she does in the end of the opinion, after going through all this, she then tells the Lakin defense that they can't argue and she won't listen to an argument or evidence that would refute what I just read you out of that opinion, because it's politics. So not only have they taken his constitutional rights away from him, they've given a fictitious head fake of an opinion and then tells the defendant, on top of taking his rights away, he doesn't have the right to argue because it's politics and they won't listen.
Absolutely.
They have completely shut down the defense that would ever ask the commander-in-chief and demand the question be answered, which leaves now a man by name running your armies and navies, and the armies and navies don't answer to anybody but him. And then when you get into the de facto part of what you're mentioning, Neil, she also states that if basically this gentleman was not eligible, then the same powers through de facto goes to, say, I don't know, the Commandant of the Marine Corps. In Lakin's case, she's trying to say that the head of the Department of the Army, by de facto, has the same powers of the Commander-in-Chief. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
No. Preposterous. Preposterous.
Where does
I did hear it when Colonel Lynn said it.
Exactly. Where does the Commander-in-Chief, or let's get down to the nitty-gritty, where does the convening authority or Colonel Lynn derive their power from?
right from the
comes
top.
Directly from the commander in chief.
Absolutely.
So does that mean that they're the ultimate authority in this question? And now nobody in the military can ever ask again whether their order is lawful or unlawful? Which, by the way, as I explained, is your oath to the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
This is how serious this case is. And as everybody knows, when they said that, in fact, it's never been challenged, it sure as heck has. And Neil, you've talked mm-hmm. about treason for months. The treason complaint was used in the citizen presentments. It hasn't been hidden, it's been obstructed. What's going on in Monroe County is a derivative of the federal government not allowing that to go any further than there, and they didn't expect us to do the digging we've done to expose the criminality that is going on in Tennessee to obstruct it. But now Colonel Lakin has asked a question in active duty that demands an answer, and they're refusing, trying to break the chain of command, but by breaking the chain of command, have completely put a match to the Constitution itself.
It's absolute treason, and I have no trouble repeating that word whenever I talk about this issue, and we don't want to mince it. You know, it gets down to the fact that everybody supposedly in authority and at the top is aware. The trouble is the people do not know, and so we need to get that mass of people aware, and that's why
We've got hundreds of thousands of people supposedly marching on Washington, D.C. today. Mm-hmm. They're being trained to fight politics,
That's right.
Fighting over who is going to go into office without taking back your judiciary and protecting your Constitution is like throwing the baby out the window with the bathwater. And they're not doing a good job at that. They're in Washington, D.C. today. They need to demand these answers while they're in Washington of the White House, but especially the Supreme Court of the United States. Because, ladies and gentlemen, you've got nine justices that are put in place now politically, political appointments, rather than being in there to protect and be the final barrier to our Constitution. It's time for the American people to stop talking about patriotism or patriots and stand for the foundations of your very being of this country. Because if it dies here, it dies around the world.
You know, one of the arguments I use all the time is that every time we protest against the policies of this government and this Congress and this president, this de facto president, we give them legitimacy. And
absolutely.
That
you don't argue policy.
We don't argue it with them. We must have everybody argue that it is illegitimate, the entire administration, and it must go before we can continue further.
Again, if we make it simple, Neil, and try and keep it on its face,
mm-hmm.
arguing policy is why we are where we are today. You argue law.
Yep.
Let me give you an example. Everybody's talking about Arizona. We're under siege in Arizona. We're under siege. You have foreign-born domestic enemies crossing our borders by the droves. You now have the State Department and your commander-in-chief protecting them, opening 80 miles and closing it off to the U.S. citizens. If you go to the State Department and look at their mission statement, the State Department exists to protect the United States sovereignty and the United States citizens. The commander-in-chief's primary job is to protect the citizenry in this country. They took an oath to it. On top of that, you have federal laws on the books, that is not being upheld, and they now have become accessories under that law as felons. Nobody's questioning that. They're arguing over the policy, they're arguing over the issues, and they're keeping you folks in the weeds. You're either a nation of laws or you're a nation of men. And you're inches away from living in Venezuela.
And, you know, I'm arguing those same points at the city council level as being the lowest elected officials to make them aware so that no one can say we did not know.
Exactly. You don't have – what we have now is politicians. You do not have statesmen. And JB's written about it and talked about it. These are public servants. They're stealing from you. You're the employer. Barack Obama, and I'm going to say this and I'm going to say it loud and clear, Barack Obama did not walk in the White House by himself. Mm-hmm. The American people put him in the White House. The biggest problem we have right now isn't Barack Obama.
It's the people who put him there.
It's the people of the United States that have allowed through progressivism or Marxism or communism or any ism you want to pick out, have allowed it. But I want to remind everybody, look at the polls. I don't believe in the polls, but look at the polls. Look at the Progressive Caucus. Look at K Street. Look at who's financing the Progressive Caucus. Look at the national organizations that go out to include the unions, brutalizing people, writing legislation, going home every night laughing at people that aren't in their homes anymore, who aren't working, looking for work, who are living very well with great retirements, with great health plans, and you folks are financing them while you're watching the very people you're complaining about steal from you. And now not only are they stealing your resources and your money, they're stealing your life through the Constitution.
Yep.
If people don't get together, listen, the U.S. Patriots Union isn't for everybody. It's not, and we're telling people this. I'm saying this out loud tonight. We're not looking for everybody to join. We don't want everybody to join. We're not trying to align with other organizations as we work with other organizations. We're looking for the 3 or 4% of the people that understand what we're talking about to be able to put this to use, apply it tangibly, and get it done. All it's going to take is 3 or 4%. We will overwhelm the system for what it's supposed to be doing, not what it is doing. That's your peaceful remedy to take your own country back, and it starts at Fort Meade today.
Well, I consider myself in that 3 or 4%, and that's all we had when we fought the Revolutionary War.
Absolutely. And all you need is the other 10 or 20% to stay out of the way and support you. Now, as you said that in the Revolutionary War, 3%. 3% when we were colonies wasn't many people. Think about it. The 10 or 20% that sat on the fence but supported that 3% is why you won. You had a large percent that didn't do it either way and sat there trying to figure out, I'll go with whoever wins. And then you had the small percent that was still loyal to the king. If it wasn't for that 13 to 23% supporting and working for each other with a handful of people actually doing the heavy lifting, we wouldn't be having this conversation today.
Well, 3% will have 10 million.
There you go.
We
there you
need
go.
Million.
There you go. And it's there. It's there. We just need to give them the tools from the grassroots level, from the precinct level, all the way to what we're fighting at the federal level. The federal level is only what's going on and allowed to go on at the community level, the civil level. These people graduate from the cesspool. You have the tools. The only thing that needs to happen is you need to engage. Once you engage and you see success and you engage together, this can't be like what's going on with the Tea Parties. It's fractioned all over the place. There are no true leaders. There's no focus. Everything's being chased. That's why you're seeing the problems in the primaries. I mean, iCaucus, we work with iCaucus. They think a 28% rate of getting people on a ticket is great. I'm not in that game. 28% is nothing. Out of all the Tea Party candidates, you only really got three supposedly viable Tea Party candidates, and they're connected directly to the RNC. It's craziness. People have delegated. They're so used to delegating things that they've joined things hoping somebody else is going to do it. It's not going to happen. Don't give your money to PACs. Don't do it. Don't give your money to these national organizations that have a board and then pick somebody that you wouldn't support anyway. Christ, you already got that in Washington, D.C., with the RNC or the DNC. Give it directly to the candidate and back the candidate that you believe, whether it be a Democrat or Republican, forget the stinking R's and D's, they work together. Support these people, the judges that support the actual rule of law. Hold the ones that don't accountable. And if we start doing that around the country, we will overwhelm the system and you will take it back. Welcome to Cloud Piven. That's all it is. The difference between what we want to do and what they have accomplished is they have pretty evil goals. We don't. We want to live free. And we haven't been a free nation for a long time. I don't want to ramble on here, but I've been on. Does anybody have any questions? Because I do have to get back to what I was doing, and I've enjoyed myself, but I don't want to leave unless if anybody has a question. I'm not watching chat. I'd like to stay and answer any questions if there is any.
Tim, for starters, I've been watching kind of the questions coming out of chat. If there are any, I'll be glad to pass them on. I think a lot of our people are pretty savvy and have been following this and have a pretty good idea of what's going on. I would like a report on what's going on down in Tennessee.
Tennessee, I'm going to do it real quick. I can't talk about a lot of things that are going on down there. Neil, if he stays with you, he's up to speed on a lot of stuff and can really talk about the situation for what he's put out. Neil, as he knows, I'm directly involved and talk with the attorneys and Walt, Commander Fitzpatrick, every day. But when everybody gets to see what's going on in Tennessee, it's going to be a fishbowl, maybe not as dirty in places as it is in Tennessee, but it's going to be a fishbowl to look into what your judiciary actually is around the country. Earlier we talked about, the information was talked about your grand juries. Your grand juries were usurped a long time ago. The citizen grand jury is the fourth branch of government. They don't acknowledge it because, I don't know, they put in the rules of procedure. But your grand juries were usurped a long time ago. And that's why they're run by prosecutors now and not the body of men, which is the grand jurors. Neil can fill people in on that. He's been involved in a lot of things that revolve around the grand jury. But in Monroe County, you're dealing with murder. You're dealing with attempted murder. You're dealing with extortion. You're dealing with grand juries that have been stacked and illegal for almost 30 years. You're dealing with dirty judges that are using force through the sheriff and police departments. This will all come out, and it started by another naval officer that tried to walk into a grand jury as a citizen with a complaint of treason for what's going on in this country. And when he was obstructed at the grand jury, we started investigating into why this would happen. And this is what we've come up with in a year and a half. There are people. I had a conversation with a lady about a week ago, and I'm not mentioning names of who they are because they're all scared to death for their life down there. And I'm not kidding you. Prior to Mr. Miller being killed, 2 weeks prior to that, I was talking to people to try and get folks down there to make sure nothing happened to some of these people. And all of a sudden, Mr. Miller was killed just before an election. For what he knows. We have depositions that came out of Mr. Miller that was given to his best friend to give to the FBI. The FBI has done nothing. but we have them. People are coming forward all over the county and giving depositions. More awaiting. Steve Pidgeon is the attorney that's leading the case now. Steve is from Washington State. If people Google him, he's been involved in a lot of things. He's an excellent attorney. But this is going to go high order real quick in Monroe once we get kicked off. Now, there was a motion Friday for where the discovery arguments were supposed to be, and they had to be extended because they refused to give discovery. One of the other attorneys down there, and by the way, most of the attorneys are involved in the extortion and stuff that's going on down there, so please don't look for an attorney in the areas in Tennessee that you are violated in. You won't find one that isn't working with a judge or a court. And they won't come forward. There's going to be a house cleaning down there. But the lady that was talking to me, as I said a week or two ago, the veteran's been involved down there, and we haven't gone away, and we're not going to go away. We worry about Walt every day. And that's why we make as much noise as we can and get out as much information as we can, because of our fear that they're running out of airspeed and altitude down there on a whole bunch of levels. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, the feds, the local police, sheriffs, it's a mess.
Question, Tim.
Yes.
The grand jury that indicted Sheriff Bivens in the neighboring county, was that a legal grand jury?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so. I'm going to make some folks laugh right now. I get asked by another defendant that called me because I've been involved in the investigation yesterday, and his attorney left a message here for me to call him, and I don't know why this gentleman wanted to talk to me, but I returned the call this morning, and it was kind of fun. He's a younger kid, and I hope I help him because he has choices to make, and if he's listening tonight, he really has choices to make. He's an officer of the court. He knows what's going on down there, and he's either going to defend somebody or he's going to see what it's like to be on the other side of the bars that he sees people in. But he called me and asked me that this certain person, defendant, said that he should talk to me because I know what's going on and I could give him information that would be of help to the defense. Well, I'm not going to give this man any kind of information because I know he's involved in what's going on in the court system.
Yeah.
And that's part of what's going on in the depositions. You got pedophilia going on. You got sex crimes going on down there. And these people are all part of it.
And they're all covering it up.
So when I asked him what I could do for him, and he said I was supposed to share information, I said, well, guess what? I can't do that. I said, the only person I talk to is or work with is Steve Pidgeon. And he said to me, well, we work with Steve Pidgeon. And I said, well, no, you don't. You represented Steve Pidgeon because Steve Pidgeon needed representation, pro se hack, so he could come into Tennessee and defend Commander Walter Fitzpatrick under Tennessee law. Beyond that, you have no ties to Steve Pidgeon. I said, and we thank you for that, by the way. So when I wouldn't share anything, he was quiet. I said, let me ask you a question. And as you know, Neil, last night it was mentioned that the mayor and Mr. Miller were arrested. One guy, I believe, is 64 years old. The other gentleman is 67 years old. They're trying to make it look like this illegal grand jury is legal and is working, because when you arrest the mayor and you arrest another city official for using prisoners out of the sheriff's jail to do the landscaping in your yard,
that's
not kind of illegal. It's kind of illegal. But the way it's written up is these guys could go into the jury, into the jail, and check them out to go do it. Now, how do you do that without the sheriff?
Mm-hmm.
So when I left the young man, I said, I talked about this. I said, I see Mr. Bebb has indicted people, and the TBI worked for supposedly a month and a half, 2 months on this investigation before they arrested two gentlemen that, you probably had to help to the court today. I said, but I find it kind of funny that if the TBI spent two months or a month and a half doing an investigation to arrest these two people, how come the sheriff wasn't indicted? Because they're over at his house doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And, oh, by the way, how did these guys leave the jail to be checked out without the sheriff's permission? How does that work? So that's some of the foolishness that's going on down there. And I don't mean to say foolishness. I'm talking about this one incident. There's some very, very serious things going on in Monroe County. People are very worried and scared for their own lives. They've been threatened verbally and written. We have a death already. And as I started to say, the woman that I talked with asked and pleaded, please don't leave us. 6 months ago, Neil can tell you, we could get nobody to help us with anything down there or even talk. They were so scared. Now that we're there and we're exposing what's going on, we have all these good folks that listen to the shows and have been around the nation, and it's out on the Internet. It's being picked up by some very large people that will be coming out here pretty quick. They see that there is help, and they see it through working together. This is what we were talking about today. This is what the Patriot Union is about. You get involved, you give them the tools, and you support. That support comes from the grassroots. You apply that around the country, and all of a sudden people have the spirit because they have the backing to do what is right. Nobody's afraid to stand alone. And we've been asked, please don't leave us alone. We know you're busy. We know this is going on. Please stay with us until we take our town back. And, of course, we've assured them we're going to. We're not going to go anywhere. But this is one example of what can happen across the country tangibly and actually accomplish something, expose what is wrong, and fix it. Not holding signs, not signing petitions. You look at the money that's being spent to travel to D.C. God bless them all. I believe in it. They give incentive to each other. There's going to be classes, I guess, going on. We have people down there right now that are going to talk on Saturday. When you leave, apply it. With all the money that's being spent, you can stay in your home, use your computer, use the phone like we're doing now, work together, network, and it doesn't cost you anything to get it done but your time. It doesn't cost you anything. You just apply it and you get it done. And you support each other.
Well, after Lakin gets railroaded in by this de facto police power, where does it go from there? What's his recourse after that?
We're working hard, and like I said, Terry, and I didn't call you Bob this time. I'm starting to come back around. It must be a second wind here. We're trying to make sure that doesn't happen, and that's why I'm saying we'll get information to you. We're working with the veterans. We're bringing the veterans together. There's things in the works. There is a defense, as everybody knows. There are people willing to defend him. I'm saying this out loud tonight for the first time. There are people willing to defend him. It's up to the people around him and the colonel himself, most of all, to let that happen. And that will come out in the next few days, like I said, by Monday. It won't come out on a Friday. Nobody will pay attention to it or over the weekend. So Monday or Tuesday, this will be coming out. We'll get it to Neil. We'll get it to all the people that make sure they get it out and do it all the time. And everybody will know what that defense is. They'll know who some of the people that are coming forward. And then it's up to them. Excuse me, it's up to them. If, in fact, they follow this disastrous path they're going, and Colonel Lakin will be convicted, then we come from outside and intervene on his behalf. And we will not abandon Colonel Lakin either. If we abandon Colonel Lakin in any way at this time, Colonel Lakin doesn't pay the price. His family pays the price for his outstanding service. We pay the price as people in this nation. You have as much to lose as Colonel Lakin does. So with that said, is there anything else I can do for anybody or besides thank everybody for listening to me ramble?
Do you guys know who Marine Mom is in the chat room?
Yes, I do. She got a question?
She says, she made a statement. She said, what you all have to understand, that not only have the residents of Monroe County been threatened, Tim and Commander Fitzpatrick have also. Their involvement has put them in the crosshairs.
Well, she might know best. She knows us very well.
Is that your mom?
Excuse me?
Is that your mom?
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, hello, Tim's mom. We're glad to have you in the chat room.
There's a lot of people watching over us, and you know, there are risks for everybody. There are risks for everybody. But
Tim, before you go, I'd like to give Red the floor for just a second, because when he sits this quiet that long, it means he's got some really heavy stuff that he's thinking, and I'd kind of like for him to have a chance to say it to you before you go.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I've been listening here, and I can relate very well to the frustration and such that I hear. You know, discussing the court system, the military courts, the whole legal system, because I've been exposed to it for a long time. I was the inspiration behind the research, the tremendous investment that we made starting in 1980 to investigate the ratification of the 16th Amendment and the 17th Amendment to the Constitution. It was in April of 1985 that we published the analysis of over 15,000 certified documents from the states that had voted on the ratification of those two amendments. We published that book, and we've had a lot of coverage with it. And here we are, 25 years, this last April, and we have run into these criminals in the court system and the justice system in this country, the political system that we have today. We have been violated and abused and misrepresented, you name it. We've been through it. And so as I listen to the conversation here, I sense the same frustration that we have had with the system, the legal system. And so what I see coming, of course, I've watched the deterioration. I was in the service in the Korean War, and so I've been around for a while, and I saw, even back then, I saw some serious flaws and serious problems in the military justice system. What we have today is just an extension of what we had then, only today it's much more serious. What I see on the horizon, of course, is an economic holocaust coming, and our whole economic system is probably going to implode. And what this is going to do, of course, is cause a great many Americans, lots of them, that are going to, well, their hearing is going to improve immensely. They're going to be questioning what's been going on. And I'll never forget, I had lunch with the U.S. attorney back in the state of Montana back in the early 80s one day. I took him out for lunch. And we got into a booth in a place that was a little bit more secure in the booths. And the first thing he said was something about my, he couldn't understand how come that even my detractors spoke highly of what I was doing. However, you know, he was part and parcel of the war trying to silence me and others of my kind that were speaking out against the injustices of the system. And I told him this. I said, don't worry about guys like me. I'm wide awake, or I'm trying to be wide awake and paying attention to what's going on. The people that you're going to have to worry about are the ones that get angry and get they'll lose everything they've got at some point down the road. And when they lose it all, they're going to be very angry, and they are the ones that the establishment are going to have to contend with. What we have to do, those of us that have been in this battle, we have to be doing everything we can to get ourselves better informed so that we can be the leadership that can help put this thing back together again down the road. There's something that we must consider, and that is these powers that are so dominant today, they are not going to give us our power back. It is our power that they are abusing and violating. It is our money that they are using, and they are using it against us. They're not going to give it back. We're going to have to take it back. And I think we have to have that indelibly printed in our minds, that we're going to have to take it back, because they are not going to give up. One of the comments that was made is how these people, they have their great pensions, they have their salaries, they have their health care, and all of that. And this is going to be such a sore point with those who've lost their homes, their toys, their families. They'll have lost all of their future, it might seem. And here we have those who have been the parasites, and they have bled us dry. And so it's coming. It's not going to change. But I would like to think that I have established a record as far as my conduct in this confrontation, this war with the evil that is so dominant in our system. I have established a record where I have stood against it, and each and every one of you, Terry, Neil, all of you guys, keep this in mind, that you're establishing your record of what you are going to do and what you have done. And those records, we want records that we can be proud of. I don't know when we're going to get the 16th and the 17th Amendment question settled, but at this point in time, it's just one of so many. I mean, there is just an absolute mass of situations such as this, confrontations, violations of the Constitution, criminal behavior that is so massive. And so I'm in my own life, I've got a resolve. I want to be part of taking our power back. People talk about saying we want our country back. Well, if they want their country back, they're going to have to, on an individual basis, take their power back. We have given too much of our power to these outlaws. We did it because they messed with our heads through the media, the churches, the schools. They use that which is evil and false and wicked to sidetrack us. But now we are coming back, and we're going to come back with a vengeance one of these days. And so I guess I've said enough. But I think that we need to have that resolve. we are going to take our power back. And when we take our power back, we're going to have our country back. It's been good to be on the sideline here tonight and listen to this conversation. Really good. I knew that a lot of this was happening. I got a little more of it out of the horse's mouth tonight, and I sure appreciate it.
Well, I thank you folks for inviting me. I thank you for JB, as I said at the beginning of this, and most importantly, I thank you for all the folks that are involved with Patriots Union. But you're exactly correct. As you've said so eloquently, that you've been in this fight for a long time. The difference in time you can look at in history. History doesn't change. They try to change it. The urgency to what's going on today is exactly what this gentleman was just explaining. Your infrastructure is falling apart. Your agriculture doesn't exist. Your financial securities are pretty close to being gone. We don't have the resources in this country that we had to recover or were there to help recover in the 1940s and beyond. They've been taken away, and they've been taken away by the government. We don't even have the industry in place to take care of ourselves. So if people don't listen to what we're trying to say, there's an easy way to do this, and there's a way that may come that people are really not going to like. And this is what we're trying to avoid. And everybody, as was just said, has the power as an individual to work collectively to make it a heck of a lot easier road to get it done. And with that, I just want to thank everybody, and thank you for giving me the time. I enjoyed it with everybody. I hope it was a help. Please, you know, look at some of the references and stuff that I've given, and you can read it for yourself. But apply it. That's the ticket.
Well, give JB our best, and really, really appreciate you being on, and I'm hoping Neil's going to hang in here with us and close out the show over the next 13, 14 minutes with us. But have a good night's rest, and we'll be praying for you guys continuously.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Neil. Have a great night, and I hope to talk to everybody soon.
Thank you, Tim.
Bye-bye.
Well, Neil?
Yeah.
What do you know about what's going on down in Tennessee?
Well, from time to time I talk with Daryl Huff, who got caught in the middle of this. Mm-hmm. And as you know, Darren, was one of the first to attend the attempted citizen's arrest.
Well, he's ex-military, and he was the one that was a videographer that got detained coming through Chattanooga area, as I recall.
Yeah. Now, nothing ever happened to him when he went, because he was a silent voice in the background on that citizen's arrest one. But since that time, they've been trying to link his arrival there and his being there. Matter of fact, they charged him with inciting to riot, which obviously he didn't. And that one's still hanging out. But as a follow-up on that, the feds got involved in bringing some charges against him because he was transporting firearms in his vehicle. And they're working on setting him up to link him with it and to discredit everything that's being done down there because somebody was exercising their right to transport and carry weapons, which they're allowed to do. You know, you can carry weapons across the state line between Georgia and Tennessee, and he has all the permits. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be hung by their own petard here because all the evidence that's been taken with video will show that there was no incitement to riot. And we have to keep the public aware of what is going on. But, yeah, as you know, Darren was a chaplain for the Georgia militia, which is an official organization.
Mm-hmm.
He was also an oath keeper. And, you know, this is a big concern of mine because the oath keepers have 10 points and orders they will not obey. And a year ago, I tried to contact the
Stuart Rhodes and the head of that, and I said, look, you should have a 1A and a 1B, that the number one order you should not obey would be orders from an illegal commander-in-chief. And they just wouldn't listen to me. And as a result of Darren going in to support somebody who is arguing that point, you do not follow orders from an illegal commander-in-chief, they fired him or removed him from Oath Keepers. So there's just too many that are not willing to stand up for the full force of the Constitution. And I figure that we could survive 4 years of anybody as president, including this buffoon, but we cannot survive without our Constitution. So we cannot pick and choose which parts of it we'll accept, and especially Article 2. The main reason for it was to make sure we don't have what we have right now. And if we don't restore that, we will not have a Constitution. But what else is going on in Tennessee? It's still in limbo. There's a federal case against Darren with three of the six charges that were brought against Commander Fitzpatrick. But we got to keep the public focused on it so they can't shove it under the rug.
What's the next thing we need to be watching for there?
For there? I'm not sure of a date of the next hearing. We'll get it out when we know there is another one. But to see what kind of steps the feds take against Darren. You know, he was under, what do they put it, an ankle bracelet on him. What do they call it? Not house arrest, but monitoring.
Yes.
And it was such a, you know, it gets pretty hot down there in Georgia, and you can't wear long pants all the time working. And he couldn't keep a job. You know, people say, hey, this guy's walking around with an ankle bracelet. Must be a criminal. And so this is the way that the feds and the government have intimidated. But one of the terrible things that has come out of what the Fed is doing, they charged Darren with interstate commerce or unlicensed using, carrying weapons or dealing in weapons in interstate commerce. Now, he said, I obviously was not in interstate commerce. How do you bring that charge? And the supposed defense that has been appointed him said, well, here's what they're charging, that because the weapon that you have was made in Hungary and was obviously commercially brought here, then you must have been involved in interstate commerce. Now, what that means is that anybody standing on the firing range practicing could be accosted by the FBI or any of these forces and say, oh, let's take a look at your weapon. And no, it was made in some other state, and you're under arrest. That's the significance of the kind of charges that they've brought. And we have to make sure that the public knows this is what they're doing. So,
wow, that's just amazes me. But then if you really want to be amazed, go look at what's happened with Edgar Steele up in Idaho.
Mm.
Have you followed that at all?
No, I haven't seen that one. What's that with that one?
Red, are you up to date on what's happened with Steele recently?
Well, I information, supposedly he will go to trial in February, or if not February, November. They're really trying to manipulate everything up there. It's the feds, of course, and they have the assistance of the ADL, and of course Edgar Steele has a reputation as being a lawyer who will fight for the underdog, and he takes a lot of cases, or he has in the past a lot of pro bono cases. And he will, he'll put himself out. They want to silence him. He's a great writer. He's authored some books and such. And they've set him up, and I don't know how it's going to pan out. But he'll go down fighting. If he goes down, he'll go down fighting, because that's his nature. He's He's a redhead. And having been a redhead myself most of my life, I have to be on his side of this thing, I guess.
Neil, you're not,
I've never met him.
But you're not familiar with Steele, right, Neil?
No, and but what are the charges against him? Or
okay, let me
well,
give
they
you.
They say that he was trying to kill his wife and his mother-in-law.
Hmm.
He was trying to hire a killer.
Oh.
And it's phony. Everybody knows it's phony. But you see,
Red, let me give him a quick rundown, Red.
Yeah.
Steele had a major heart attack back in December, and he was just recovering from that and was about ready, I think, to start back up on his radio show because he was famous for going after Zionists and the Khazars and people like that, so he became an ADL poster child. And he had been accumulating a good amount of silver, and he had a guy that he trusted that turned out to be an FBI informant that was a plumber and a contractor. And he had him actually help him build some secret rooms in his garage. And the guy went back after Edgar, after the construction was over, and Edgar had stashed his, you know, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 worth of silver in those rooms. This guy comes back knowing where they are and goes in there and steals this stuff. And as a means of covering up his theft, he put pipe bombs under the bottom of both Edgar's and his wife's car.
Mm.
And they did not go off. Apparently they were improperly fused or whatever, and they did not explode. So Edgar discovered it, and as a means of covering his tracks, this guy, being an FBI informant, files these charges against Steele that he hired him. He said he hired him to put those bombs under there in order to kill his wife and mother-in-law.
Dude.
And they dummied up these recordings. You know, the guy's a fairly well-known radio personality, so easy to get his voice tracks and to dummy up a tape to say whatever you wanted to say. Mm-hmm. And his wife, they played this for his wife and tried to convince her that she should file charges because he was trying to have her killed, and she listened to the tapes and she could tell right off. In some cases, she didn't even believe it was Edgar's voice, that they were using somebody else's voice, but she could tell that these tapes had been substantially tampered with and refused to believe it and told them that those tapes were erroneous. Yet they've moved him around. They've kept people from getting to him. They would not allow him to bail out. And so there's been some real political prisoner stuff going on, you know, similar to what we saw with Leo Haffey over in Tennessee.
Yeah. And Fine in California, an attorney that's been sequestered away. Mm.
Are you referring to Orly Tate's and her $20,000 thing from the judge in Georgia?
No, that, that one's still out there, but she has been getting the word out about and Attorney Fine. He discovered some stuff, and they wanted to quiet him down, so they put him in jail. And I mean, this just is so deep across our country that it makes people want to give up, and it makes me want to fight harder. So every time they say to me they're not going to do anything about it if you speak about it, I say, well, I'm halfway there. In other words, when I give a city council meeting presentation, it's not just the 5 council members and the 10 or 15 people in the room that I have notified of the treason that's going on. It's the 5,000 people that they talk to or see it. And every time we get 5,000 more people aware, then we're on our way to hitting that critical mass that we're going to need of 10 to 15 million people behind us.
We have 45 seconds. Give us our marching orders for the next week.
I would really like to see more people give that city council presentation. I've got some lined up, and the most important thing they do is when they fill out that form, just say it's voting issues in whatever town that is. Nothing more, nothing less, so that they cannot stop you before you speak.
And it's there, and people are getting ready to do it, but they just, it's going slow. But I'm positive. We're going to save this country.
Well, thanks for coming on and joining the conversation and closing it out with us. We will see everybody next week, and Neil, you're always welcome here.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate what you're doing out there, and everybody should be taking on that 3-minute talk to their town council. I'm going to be doing it here in the next 2 weeks myself, so.
That'd be great. Okay. So, great show and a lot of great information tonight. Thank you, Red. Love your work with those grand juries.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Country.